In part one of our conversation about immigration issues, we looked at worker conditions in poultry processing facilities and one of the news headlines that shook the nation in 2019. In part two, we're going to talk about the work that's being done to move towards a more just path forward that works for everyone in our food system, especially the most vulnerable workers. We're going to look at some policies in the works to stop the abuse we seldom hear about happening in processing plants, fields, and even fast food chains. I'm Tom Colicchio, and this is Citizen Chef. People who grow and process our food should have more power than most workers. But for generations now, these workers have been marginalized and by our federal government. Farm workers don't go on strike. They haven't said since like Chavez. They don't have the kind of power that they should have. They're not able to negotiate or enter into negotiations or to have a contract. There's no collective bargaining. I mean, there's no way to negotiate. I mean, Immokalee workers did that. They negotiated for a penny extra bushel.
Well, we have been seeing a lot of changes due to the what we call the Campaign for Fair Food.
That's Gerardo Chavez Reyes of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers,
which started after almost a decade of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers focusing on bringing the growers to negotiate and talk about how to eliminate situations of verbal and physical abuse that were very common. According to a Southern Poverty Law Center study that came out a few years ago, 90% of women were facing situations of sexual harassment and or assault in the fields. And modern day slavery, where workers have been forced to work at gunpoint in some cases under threats of death against them and their families also. In different investigations that we have conducted by working with the FBI, the Department of Justice. So we have been able to create a solution for that. And I'm gonna get into that in a bit. But those were the goals that the CAW was pursuing, along with an increase in wages, as you were mentioning. We were demanding for a penny more per pound of tomatoes that were harvested and ended up in corporations that we were asking to join onto the Fair Food Program.
You know, that worked because the public got behind it. It was a good messaging campaign. I mean, they went after the, you know, Burger Kings and McDonald's of the world and the Wendy's of the world and said, you know, you're not willing to back one penny per bushel. It'll have a zero effect on your bottom line. And it'll have a major effect on the workers.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we did was to create a theory of change. And that theory was, stated that if corporations and the market as a whole was being used to drive prices down, because that's how they operate. They buy in huge amounts the tomatoes they need, in this case, and other vegetables that we also harvest. And we ask these corporations to participate with us, to buy under the conditioning of zero tolerance for modern day slavery happening in the fields, which means they would have to commit to cut purchases if any case of modern day slavery was to take place in any of the farms that were supplying them, along with the payment of a penny more per pound and a list of other rights that would result eventually in the elimination of modern day slavery in the fields, but also a dramatic decrease in situations of sexual harassment and the elimination of sexual assault. I'll share a little bit about one of the last cases that took place in Florida, actually a few blocks away from the office where we have been organized for many, many years. This case involved workers who were forced to sleep inside a cargo truck. They were locked with a padlock, actually, inside this truck as punishment. And there was a padlock used to keep them inside, but there was also chains that were literally used to tie them up just to show the rest of the crew who was in control. These workers were taken to different farms, and they were without access. They were living without access to a bathroom, for example. Something like that would mean that if you needed to actually use a bathroom, you would have to just like hold it until they let you out, or go in the same corner. That's horrible. That's a way in which people are stripped of their dignity and their humanity while producing the food that ends up in everybody's plates. And many people don't know that. So in this situation, workers escape. One of them push his way through with the help of the others through the roof of this old U-Haul type of truck and brought a ladder to help workers escape. Two of those workers came to our office and talked to me and another one of my colleagues. They showed us the bruises that they had all over their body, in their legs and in their backs, the product of the beatings that they were suffering at the hands of these crew leaders that are now in prison. In total, for these cases that I am mentioning, there's been 9 investigations, 8 prosecutions, more than 1,200 workers that have been freed from these conditions, and 15 bosses that have gone to federal prison. That's what we're talking about here. And it is not a problem as it has been described sometimes prior to the agreements that we have reached with the agricultural industry, the tomato growers represented under the Florida Tomato Growers Exchange. A problem of a few bad apples. It was a problem in which the industry needed to pay attention in how they were treating their workers in a systemic way. So a systemic solution was needed, and that's why we decided to bring the market to work with us, to condition their purchasing and use the power to put a stop to that crime.
Right. Now, Gerardo, I heard you say a few times that some of the bosses were put in jail. What happened to the companies? Did they take any responsibility? Were any of the CEOs for these companies, were they punished at all? How far up did this go?
That's an excellent question, because that gives me the opportunity to share a little bit about why it is important to use the market in that case. We as workers were trying to bring the growers to the table. And what happens is that the growers didn't bear any responsibility. They would simply just come out publicly and say, look, this is nothing to do. This has nothing to do with us. This is just a few apples. That was the response. And legally, it wasn't the responsibility. The law would go only to make arrests of those who were directly hiring people, bringing them and threatening them and beating them and all of those abusive conditions that are part of these cases. And the industry would simply just wash their hands, because they would not be asked to go to court.
So what's the relationship between the growers and these field bosses?
It used to be that the crew leaders, which is how we call them, those who go and contract people in the community, served as a firewall of sorts. They would be considered independent entities, therefore making it possible for the industry to say, look, it is not our responsibility. We just hired this guy. This guy brings the people, and we don't know. And when we ask, well, how is it that you don't know how the people that are working in your company are treated? That's just unconscionable. So that's why we brought that also as one of the points that we are now implementing with the growers under the Fair Food Program, which is the direct hiring. That brings the responsibility to the doorsteps of whoever is the person in charge of those companies, those agricultural companies.
Right. So these are just these were contracted workers. They weren't actually employed by the company.
No, but in order to eliminate that abuse and every other abuse that takes place in the fields, we needed to bring that kind of responsibility and make that connection. Ask the growers to take responsibility by hiring directly every worker, and in that new way of doing that, more normal way, I should say, because it is how it happens in most places. The growers are now paying a lot of attention and working with us. So we're in this partnership with them since 2011, when we brought at that point 14 corporations up to now that are working with us. Taco Bell, McDonald's, Burger King, some of the bigger names, but also from the supermarket industry, Trader Joe's, even Walmart is working with us. So that gives us the power, or gave us the power, to change those conditions by bringing the suppliers and bringing the buyers of those tomatoes to sit together with us and reach these agreements to condition the purchasing to the implementation of the rights that were desperately needed by our people.
Right. Where is OSHA? Does OSHA have a hand to play here?
The Fair Food Program basically brings to life laws that were dormant. The laws that aim to protect workers in regards to the minimum wage payment that every worker should receive whenever you're working by piece but are not able to harvest enough. Mm-hmm. Your employer has to provide for that. Those provisions, including provisions that have to do with health and safety, are observed in farms that are participating with us. But outside of those farms, the same is not true. There are farms that are trying to constantly cheat the system, not do enough for workers, and not follow the things that are also readily enforced. Because remember, Tom, it's not just about what the law says, it's about who's enforcing it and how. Mm-hmm. And in this case, just to give you a sense, not just about OSHA, but in general, workers that are vulnerable and afraid and are afraid to lose their job have to deal with the question, especially or in situations where they are not protected by the Fair Food Program. You have to ask yourself a question before you bring a complaint, whether it's about OSHA violations, whether it is about labor violations. You have to ask yourself as a worker, do I complain knowing that that's the right thing to do? Do I complain about sexual harassment, about wage theft, about all of these things that put my health and my life at risk, knowing that I'm going to be fired? Mm-hmm. In other words, am I willing to risk my ability to feed my kids?
Right.
To do the right thing, which is protecting my dignity? And the answer that most people would give in a scenario like that is, no, I cannot afford to lose the food for my kids. So that was the issue that we are now tackling with the Fair Food Program. Now, it is not perfect in regards to how we're responding to the pandemic, because it is something that we never had to deal with this, right? But growers inside the Fair Food Program are doing everything they can, providing the personal protective equipment, working to get all those things that are needed, providing extra transportation, as I was saying before, but also trying to figure out, how to respond when workers come back positive, so that they can provide the housing to isolate them. Mm-hmm. It is there's a lot of work that needs to be done.
Right.
But workers are better inside the farms that are participating under the Fair Food Program, and this collaboration that started since 2011. That is applying to about 30,000 workers. It's helping us to be able to create something that didn't exist before. Right. We have the ability for workers to form part of committees of health and safety, to be able to talk about how to improve those approaches, including now with COVID-19, so that workers are able to protect themselves better. But still, that doesn't eliminate the vulnerability, which is in part why it's important to bring more corporations to do the same and to fortify all the gains that the Fair Food Program represents for workers.
So two questions. What large companies are not part of the Fair Food Program?
Well, right now, Wendy's, it's basically the company that we are asking to join onto the Fair Food Program. And they recently announced in their shareholder meeting that happened a few weeks ago that they are doing as much as they can, but they continue to refuse for workers, they say, and they continue to refuse to join the Fair Food Program. There's nothing out there that can protect workers as much as the Fair Food Program does. And even the Fair Food Program needs to be readjusted for this a specific scenario,
right?
To do more, When this is just falling absolutely short in buying from greenhouses where outbreaks were registered, and they don't have any kind of answer, they just do the talk, but talking is cheap, you know.
Sure.
This is not an issue where everything is about just the numbers, just the economics. We are not just statistics. We're human beings, and problems that impact the lives of human beings need to be treated not as a public relations issue, but a human rights issue. And that's what we have. So we're boycotting Wendy's action.
How does one know that a particular organization, fast food or supermarket, how do you know they're participating in the Fair Food Program?
You can visit the website of an organization that was created with the purpose of basically making sure that all the provisions that I am talking about are happening in all the farms that are part of the Fair Food Program. And the name of this organization is the Fair Food Standards Council. So it's fairfoodstandards.org. I think that's the address. And what they do, their whole purpose, it's to oversee the implementation of the program, to receive complaints from workers with a 24/7 line that workers can call. And there are investigators that go to the farms and talk directly to the workers. They do auditing, going over 50% in every farm. And whenever there are smaller operations, 100% of the workforce is approached by them, which is remarkable. You know, the most reputable firms that the claim that they have done auditing or monitoring, the most reputable would say 10 to 15% at the maximum. And when we're talking about companies where you don't have the power of the market, like outside of the Fair Food Program, usually these firms work even with the buyers. You know, they're hired by companies to try to come up with this notion that everything is fine on the ground, but they don't really have the power to fix anything. Under the program, the Fair Food Standards Council has the power of the market of 14 corporations that are ready to exercise the purchasing on the conditioning of the implementation of those rights, which gives them an incredibly unique power and ability to fix the problems. What that translates into is that there have been bosses at the beginning of the implementation of the program that were committing abuses and were committing crimes of sexual harassment. All of those issues were resolved in matter of weeks. When you do it through the regular channels, you know, when there's a situation of sexual harassment or discrimination, the EEOC will intervene. And sometimes those cases take years to be solved. Right. We have helped workers that had to go through the ordeal of dragging these cases and having to work in the same place as the perpetrator for years, 3 to 4 years. And that's just justice delayed. And for us, that's justice denied. So, right. So that's why this is really important.
Right. So, I mean, obviously, we know how difficult COVID's been, in the country for so many people, for so many workers. Do you see a silver lining at all? Because of COVID, is it causing bringing attention to some causes that may be easier to draw attention to now because of COVID? Or is COVID putting you back a few steps?
What I see, it's COVID is not the only crisis that we have to deal with. What we see is that COVID is bringing, you know, up to the eyes of people, situations that have always existed for workers in terms of the vulnerability. What I think is needed here is a collaboration that is aiming to decrease the risks that COVID represents. And that requires resources dedicated to communities that are suffering. That requires the government taking an active role in overseeing and prioritizing the well-being of the workforce as opposed to the economy. Because here in Florida, you know, we fought for about a month since April. We started to call the local government, the Department of Health here and in the state, and created a petition for Governor Ron DeSantis that many people endorsed. Many organizations were asking for him to dedicate testing, and we were asking for a field hospital or a place in which people can be isolated, for the support that people that are at the very bottom of the economic ladder to have the support that they need so that they can actually isolate and have all of those resources. Nothing really happened. And all of this, I think, centers at the end of the day in something very simple. Our humanity, it seems, is not as important as the humanity of others, but what we produce is essential. So that's the huge contradiction that we have to live with.
Yeah, and you're bringing up something that's really important. Listen, there's a difference between someone who's young who decides they want to go to a restaurant or they want to go to a bar and they contract COVID and they're sick, versus someone who is working for very little money that has to put food on the table and they don't have a choice whether or not they come to work or not. They're not making a decision to go to a bar.
Yeah.
They're making a decision to come to work.
Yeah, because that means food in the table.
Exactly. And that means that they actually can do exactly what so many people who give immigrants a hard time. They say they don't take care of their family, they're on welfare or whatever. No, they're actually doing what they're supposed to be doing. They are going to work, they are working hard, and they're trying to support their families for what? For the American dream.
Mm-hmm.
To actually come here, contribute to the country, and to make sure, like everybody else who's come to this country since the beginning of time here, they just come here, well, not everyone, but to come here because they want to do better for their family.
Exactly.
And that's it. And you're right. When it has to come down to humanity. It has to come down to looking at everyone and seeing their inherent value. Not the value of how you can abuse their work for some sort of, you know, gain, but the inherent value that they have to contribute back to society and what their next generation is going to bring. And so, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think you hit on the head. This is about humanity. It's not about economics. It's not about the bottom line. This is about human potential, human value, human worth, and dignity.
Exactly. And I think that that's what we're missing. And what I'm going to say is going to sound really cliche, but I think that, you know, in not paying attention to what's going on to farm workers and essential workers everywhere, we are not just risking, to create something that is already unfolding, a food crisis. Many plants have closed. If workers get sick in the fields, who's gonna harvest the food that everybody needs? That's gonna create a crisis. But the cliche part is, if we are not able, as a country, to do better, we are losing our own soul.
Exactly.
Because we're shooting ourselves in the foot by ignoring that. Because you cannot live in a contradiction in which, in one hand, you come out and clap for health workers, which is awesome. You know, it's an awesome way in which people can do something that's symbolic. But it can't simply be symbolic. Because even workers, you know, frontline workers inside the hospital need equipment, need support, need more from this government, and should have it. But at the same time, farm workers are also people that should be recognized, not with clapping. That's not what we're asking for. But with real change, with real protections, with real demands that make sense so that we don't lose what is desperately, so desperately needed. There's more than 20, I don't know exactly the number right now, but there are more than 20 states that are seeing spikes in cases of COVID. And this is the cause for alarm, and it should be. The reason that is going on is because that same type of mentality. You know, we disappear when the tomatoes and other vegetables make it out of the fields and into the supermarket. We disappear of the minds of people. People need to remember that if you are or a loved one is on a hospital bed, that person is depending on the hard work of essential workers that are producing the food so that they can recover. We cannot afford to lose that. We can't. Right. It's just simply a really unstrategic move, and it is not just an error in a strategy. It's an error that gets paid in kind in a really horrible way with the lives of people that shouldn't be dying in hospital. Right. We can reduce that, but we need to act.
Yeah, I think what it comes down to is these workers need to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be acknowledged. And you're right, it's not just clapping at 7 o'clock. It's about long-term commitment to their viability. Gerardo, this has been great. Thank you very much. This is a fascinating conversation. I'm speaking to Gerardo Reyes Chavez from the let me try to, my Spanish is terrible, but the Coalición de Trabajadores de Immokalee are the Immokalee workers, the CIW.
That sounds good to me. that sounds perfect. I would say, Tom, thank you. It's an honor for me to be able to connect finally. I think that these conversations need to be going, and yeah, I mean, whenever you want to continue, we can talk on different topics too, you know, from the perspective of those who are on the bottom. That needs to happen more often, because many times you hear people speaking from or with a mantle of expertise when they don't know what it is to be poor, to be hungry, and to be fighting while working. And that needs to change. So I thank you for taking this approach and inviting us. And I think that people would benefit greatly from these ongoing conversations. So
thank you. Well, thank you. Keep fighting and stay safe. I want to give a special thanks to Gerardo Chavez Reyes of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. And as always, big thanks to Kristen Castry and Lori Silverbush of A Place to Table. This is Citizen Chef with me, Tom Colicchio. Our executive producer is Christopher Hasiotis. Our researcher is Jesslyn Shields, and our producer and editor is Gabrielle Collins. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe.